Well, welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 237. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and along with me through the magic of Skype is Dr. Jonathan Fast. John, what's up?
And along with me is a little Sandy puppy who may or may not bark during the recording of this show.
Yeah, we got dueling dogs. We're going to do a podcast just with our dogs next to the microphone next week. So
pretty much.
The story of that is in the off topic, so you can fast forward about an hour or so, and hopefully you will get to that. Let's get right into it, John.
Let's do it.
I don't know if you knew this, but there was a crazy Perform Better Summit.
I heard the rumors.
This past weekend, the first of the trifecta of the United States summits, and they also have one in Germany this year, which is pretty cool, and I'm pretty much a lock to go to the Germany one at this point now, too.
Which really? Is
really interesting. Yeah, it's for work.
Oh, that's cool. Germany's cool, man.
Yeah. Expense account. So
nice.
The Providence Perform Better. I'm going to be straight up. I only got to go on Friday. And stayed until Saturday morning because my parents were away and they usually watch my dog and they needed someone to watch their dog and I needed someone to watch my dog. So I had to come back on Saturday morning while they were in Florida.
Oh, well.
But, you know, I'm going to Chicago and Long Beach anyway, so I can catch up when I go to those two. But I, you know what? I can't even sell this enough. If you're in this industry or if you like this industry, you really need to go to these summits. Like, it is a ton of fun. More than just learning, like hanging out with people that, you know, you have only conversed with over the internet or like it was great to catch up with some listeners of the show and just go to the they do a social on Friday night where there's open bar so you can kind of get loosened up a little bit and talk shop or just kind of, you know, not even talk fitness for a little bit. So I can't stress this enough. If you're in the Chicago area, the Midwest, or if you're in Western United States and you're thinking about going to Long Beach, really try to lock it in if you want to go, because I know those are filling up fast. And what I would like to do is see if I can pull together another Chicago FitCast thing, like a FitCast party or just like a go out to dinner with people. Because that was pretty successful last time. But the Providence Perform Better. I'm going to go through kind of what I saw real quick. Just to get things started. The first thing I saw in the morning was Mike Boyle's hands-on, which went through a lot of the regressions and progressions of the movement patterns that we use at MBSC, turned into a lot of Q&A. It was filmed and it will be up on Body by Boy Online if you guys are interested in that. I'm not going to get into too much of that because you know, it's not new to me, so it's not super interesting to talk about. And I think a lot of you guys, since it's a hands-on, you really need to see it. There's much less that is talked about in it. He did bring it. He had his coffee and definitely brought it in the morning. The next talk I saw, I think after that, was John Berardi's. He did a whole talk on intermittent fasting, kind of going through the research with that and the tests that he did on himself and with the precision nutrition clientele, trying all the different protocols, what worked best. And, you know, I mean, this is the new hotness. This is the new hotness that people have been kind of hammering home when it comes to nutrition and stuff like that. Obviously, Martin Burkham and Brad Pilon have been kind of heading up a lot of this stuff. And, you know, to be on the down the road, I would love to get Martin on the show. Martin's super, busy. So it's kind of hard to get him. But you've probably listened to Brad Pilon in the past talk about it. And, you know, the research is in its favor for people who can fit it into their lifestyle. So maybe I'll see if I – to be honest, I haven't had Berardi on the show in like 2 years. Maybe it's time to get him back on to talk about that and some other stuff. But, you know, it's really interesting to see someone who was super skeptical about this at the beginning, and now he's fully on board. Like, he's locked in.
But did he look at research that's done specifically on intermittent fasting, or what was he citing?
Right. Here, let me see if I can pull up some of it real quick. To be honest, you get like a handout, you get like a book of all the mm-hmm. slides. He chose not to give out the slides in the handout. Instead, he gave an article that is up on precisionnutrition.com. Okay. And so I don't have the citations in front of me, but he was citing, studies that were based on 16, 24, and 36-hour fasts and the hormonal responses between the three and, you know, finding the greatest hormonal response in terms of, maybe I can think straight this morning, but... in terms of growth hormone response in that 16-hour fast seemed to be the most beneficial. You did get a little bit more in the 24, but not mm-hmm. so much more where you'd be like, yeah, you'd be more beneficial to have people do the 24-hour fast because the 16-hour fast you can do on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. The way he sets it up for himself personally is he does the 16-hour Monday through Saturday. And I think Saturday is, he still does that window, but that's like his quote unquote cheat day. And then Sunday, it's a 24-hour fast going into Monday. It is John Brody, and he's starting off pretty lean, but he, got into a single digit body fat, pretty quickly. I think it was a 10-week period. He tried each of them for, I think about 4 weeks apiece. So he did the twice weekly fast, which is 24-hour fast, two times per week. Mm-hmm. He said in 2 weeks, he went from 178 to 171. He mentioned that he lost 4 pounds of fat, but also 3 pounds of lean mass. So that was one of the big reasons why he was not a big fan of the 24-hour, because he thought there was too much lean mass lost in that period.
For sure.
In the 16-hour fast, he actually found that his lean mass increased during that 4 week period. While he increased it by about 4 pounds, he said it did take him 14 days to get past the morning hunger. So he said he finally settled on the 16-8 system Monday to Friday in a 20-hour fast, 4-hour feed on the weekends. So in all, during the whole period, he lost 20 pounds, going from 190 to 170. 6% body fat, he went from 10% body fat to 4%.
No.
And he mentioned during these periods, like he was getting in branched-chain amino acids, all that good stuff that we've read plenty of times with the intermittent fasting.
Right.
It sounds like you're a little skeptical still.
Yeah, I am. Clearly it's not my field, so I'm not claiming to know for a fact. But, I mean, to me, I still want to see more evidence. There's no research to my knowledge specifically done on, 5 months of intermittent fasting effect on, body mass, lean body mass, whatever. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of very preliminary kinds of research. It's the same sort of research in a sense, and we're having this discussion right now on my Facebook about barefoot running, actually. If you look at the research in barefoot running, there's a ton of research looking at the mechanics and looking at how your footfall changes and how this happens and that happens. But what we don't have is research on, does this have an effect on injury? Does this have, is this sustainable? Is this whatever? It's just a lot of anecdotal, a lot of N equals one stuff, a lot of mechanical research, but not a lot of actual, here's a group that we changed their running patterns and this is what happened. We followed them for 5 months. You know what I mean? We followed them for 5 years. So because of that, you can't say yet that barefoot running is superior to the shod running condition.
So you have a prediction of the drop off of these benefits?
Right. Like to me, as of right now, my kind of feelings on this, like I can understand why it's possible that this could be effective or even to some extent beneficial. And there's certainly some early research that would indicate, you know, like you said, hormonal changes. We have a lot of information. There is some information, I shouldn't say a lot, but there is information on Ramadan fasting and athletes in Ramadan. But again, an athlete is different than an average normal person.
Yeah.
So we can't extrapolate that information and apply it to a normal individual working a 9-to-5 job or whatever. But there is some information like that. So it's not like this is totally out of nowhere. But at the same time, I still don't think that I'm sold that this idea is superior, especially when you look at just, I mean, literally years and years and years of research that basically contradicts that concept, or at least makes it seem like a little bit peculiar that this should be so good when all this other research has looked at people that miss breakfast or don't eat enough or whatever, you know what I mean? Things like that. So
well, I would come back at you and say that I think the problem the population that was skipping breakfast, a lot of that stuff led to overeating throughout the rest of the day and having poor choices. And I think the idea with the intermittent fasting is that you still, you know, you skip breakfast, but you control yourself.
Yeah, possibly. But at the same time, if you look at some of that research, they're also, again, look at the same type of analysis that you're giving, or, you know, you're saying that was given as far as, well, these hormonal responses, they have all those kinds of analyses of skip breakfast and what happens to the hormonal responses then. So what I'm saying is right now there's some contradictory information. Now, a research paper looking at just the act of skipped breakfast does not mean therefore the rest of the day is thrown off. So it could be, you know, not reflecting a total day. You know, they're just looking at people, don't eat breakfast, and then I'm going to take your blood measures an hour or two later compare, you know what I mean? So yeah, it certainly can be different, right? It can certainly be different. But I think what I'm saying is because of the whenever you have something that comes out and contradicts the standing information, the standing suggestions as far as what is good nutrition, I personally want, or anything, good nutrition, good lifting, whatever.
Yeah.
I want to see something that's very concrete. I want to see something that really is, you know, you're looking at a randomized control trial. You're looking at something that really evidences this new procedure and shows, in fact, it's superior. If not, then what you're doing is you're taking medical advice in some sense, and, you know, health advice, and you're disregarding it because you think that this new way is better, and you don't have as much information to prove that.
Okay,
so that really, you know what I'm saying? So I'm not prepared to say that this is wrong. I mean, maybe it's right.
Okay, to kind of wrap it up, all I would say is that there's some pretty smart people kind of backing this, and
sure. And there's a lot of smart people that aren't, so you can't appeal to authority on that.
Are they?
You know what I mean? I absolutely take that into consideration for sure. You want to hear what the experts, and I am not an expert in this field, so you want to know what the experts think.
Well, have you listened to like the talks with Brad Pilon, or even when John Romanello came on, he talked about. Okay.
But there's an entire country full of PhD researchers that are probably not quite on board.
Yeah.
Or if they are, you know what I'm saying? Like that's just an appeal to you know, to authority.
Well, I even look at it this way. For, you know, when it comes to this stuff, for some people it might just be the thing that clicks with them, and it allows them to, you know,
yeah, it might
reach their goals. And I think that's fine too. We talked about this like a million times. Like there's people that say, oh, eat one meal, what is the warrior diet? Like eat one meal, or I don't know if it's a warrior diet, eat one meal a day or something like that. And people have found that it is an easier way to control calories. And at the end of the day, I don't really give a crap about the hormonal benefits as much as I do a way of controlling caloric intake. When people are only getting in 2 or 3 meals a day and they're not stuffing their faces until they're, you know, completely full, it is helping them to achieve that goal.
But that's just dietary controls, and that doesn't mean that
intermittent fasting needs to be that way. For some people, it is a psychological benefit for them to get bigger meals in a day, and that 6 meals a day, like having 6 200-calorie meals, really screwed them up because they didn't end up being satisfied, and they like
sure.
But I have two of my
but
clients.
But there's no. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say two of my clients. One who is always traveling, he really does. He thrives on intermittent fasting. Like he does 24-hour fast every time he travels because he knows when he goes and travels, he has to wine and dine people. So he's kind of screwed by having to go out and potentially, you know, have a ton of calories at one meal. Doing this allows them to still stay at a caloric deficit when he's going out and doing these things. So all I'm saying is that for a lot of people out there, it is just one way to manage caloric intake.
But that's not the argument that was being made. See, what you're describing is a lifestyle choice. And as long as intermittent fasting is proven to be, is not proven to be harmful, so, you know, you can do this and you won't screw anything up and everything will be jolly and good, then that's good. And then you have to prove efficacy. Is this superior to another way? You know, okay, remember okay, the six
I'll,
meal
I'm
a day.
Say, I'm going to say, it, before we get into this yeah. like discussion, I will see if I will dig up the research that has been like cited in Pelon stuff. Check it out. And just
I've,
give
read
me
that.
Your,
I've read that research.
And,
I have.
And you thought
I'm
it
not
was
in,
inconclusive?
Not, yeah, if I feel it's inconclusive and not there. It's low-level research. It's not – he's taking – either population studies of athletes or Olympic athletes. He had one with judo players. Yep. That's not conclusive because that's a judo
okay,
Olympic athlete. And other things that he's drawing conclusions from, but that's not what the research is saying. And again, that's fine because in the beginning, when you have a theory, when you have a hypothesis, you're not going to have that gold standard randomized controlled placebo trial. So you have to start to draw things and conclusions from other things. Absolutely. But what it means is that you can't turn around and say, this is the way you should eat. Look, the same argument can be made from, paleo dieting, and the same argument can be made for barefoot running and for all of these things that a lot of us feel may be going in the right direction. But I can't tell you that that's true. Okay. I can't tell you should go barefoot.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I can't
is,
do that.
This is the big secret. Like, I'm not trying to go one way or the other. But all I'm saying is that for some people, like you could give them the dumbest effing diet in the world. If it clicks with them and it helps right. them, keep them in a deficit or a surplus, if that's what they need to do, then awesome. Like for the people who, whether you agree with paleo or not, it gets a lot of people to make better food choices. You don't even need
sure.
to call it paleo. If same thing with the people who are like all obsessed about organic food, like that's they're going into Wait. Whole Foods and they're eating more organic food, whether it be just going into the produce section and having more produce that is beneficial to them. You're having better choices of meat and dairy products, same deal. Like you're just trying to get people to better shape what their big picture is, and if you're doing that by attaching something to it, awesome. Good for you, man.
Yeah, that's fine. But again, if you use the paleo example, there are many nutritionists and researchers that feel that paleo is dangerous in terms of complete nutritional values. Now, the argument that paleo makes is different. It looks at that. But if you look at some of these researchers, if you look at – they just released a dietary guideline, like they evaluate diets, and paleo came in dead last. Now, people were up in arms in that and say that's nonsense, but for their criteria, looking at a full, the research behind it, looking at full nourishment, they're claiming that this could be a bad diet for you because you'll be lacking in at least certain nutrients. And whether or not that's true or not is something else because we don't know. But from their point of view, they're saying that this is a bad diet. So you're saying, okay, well, if it gets people to eat and whatever, that's fine. But what if it really is a bad diet? And what if people ate that way? Now, I don't know that I necessarily agree with that or believe that. But if that's true, then all these people that are on paleo are actually making themselves less healthy. That would be the way. Now, I don't know that most of us kind of feel that way, but that's what this group of research is saying. So your appeal to the authority of a lot of smart people behind intermittent fasting, there's a lot of smart people that aren't behind it. And what you call intermittent fasting, someone else calls a eating disorder. So it's not just a matter of, well, it got them to eat the right way, so that's good, because there's more behind it than just saying that. That 6 meal a day thing that you brought up the other, you know, a little bit ago, we, you know, everyone was behind that when it came out, including John Berardi. I've read articles from him about the importance of eating six, you know, five, six, 7 meals a day and what it does to your blood sugar and whatever. Until guess what?
No, they started to actually research it. Yeah, no, he's right at the front of the line when it came to that.
And they started to research it and found out you don't actually have to do it. Now, do some people still do it? Absolutely. Do I do when I can? Absolutely. I find it to be an easier way to eat. But that's doesn't mean that I believe that it's any superior to eating three meals a day, because nothing has been shown to demonstrate that. So it's fine to, you know, break up your meals and how what works for you best, but there's a difference between your eating schedule and the healthfulness or nutrition of what you're eating. And then again, going the opposite way and saying, I'm going to starve for 8 hours or 12 hours or 16 hours or whatever it is. We don't know the effect of that long term. So we can't say that this is indeed superior to what has been established as being healthy. There's a lot of controversy in nutritional research. So don't get me wrong. I don't think that the nutritional research is the end all be all. There is a lot of controversy. And people in like the paleo side of things would say all this research has been done on manipulated food sources. Okay. So you can't trust any of it because none of it is, like you said, organic and whole and whatever. And so that's an entirely different argument. But again, if we're just looking at research, I can make an opinion that may contradict some research because of those that idea, well, they didn't look at this or they didn't look at that. But I can't tell you that I am right and they are wrong because I don't have the fact. I may have a good and convincing argument, but I don't have the fact
yet. Okay. So the only thing that I was trying to say and that I'm trying to say is, when it comes to getting results with people, I just want to find out what works for them. And that's the main thing that I'm looking at. Am I looking at like, okay, let me ask you this. Just let's spitball here for a second. Do you think there's going to be negative side effects for people doing this for an extended period of time?
I have no idea. I could see how it could be.
If some like dude came up to the gym who's doing biceps, came up to you and said, "Yo, John, I just heard about this intermittent fasting thing. What do you think? Like, should I do it? You know, is it gonna hurt me?" That's my New York accent.
Yeah, that was horrible.
Thanks.
I mean, my first answer is honestly, I'm not the right guy to ask that question of. But my personal feeling is that I don't know, and I would not be surprised if it came out that this was negative.
Okay.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was positive, but again, this is something that is really different than anything else that's been, you know, taught to us beforehand.
Okay.
So when something like that comes out, I'm a little more skeptical.
Interesting. Okay. We'll see. We'll come back to this in 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it could be right. And we may all be doing it, but...
Well, I don't think we'll all be doing it because it's just never going to be a normal thing to do. Like even when, you know, you talk about it with other people, you know, you talk to anyone that's, you know, not affiliated with any kind of fitness stuff and you say, "Oh yeah, I don't eat breakfast." Like,
right.
How dare you? It's like you just kicked my dog.
Right.
Well, that was fun. Well, would you like to have a discussion with other people about this?
Sure, but I'm not really the one to discuss it. I ain't a nutritionist.
Yeah, but you're the research nerd.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean anything. That's not really an area of research. I casually know the nutritional research.
All right. Let's go next. I saw Progressive Approach to Programming by Dan John. Seen this talk. Or seeing a talk similar to this the last couple of years. But every time I see Dan John, no matter what, I don't care what he's talking about, I go to his discussions just because it's always thought-provoking and reassuring and reiterates some things that I might have let fallen off to the side. So that's another thing I would say. Go to Dave Draper. I think it's davedraper.net or something like that. Let me check real quick.
It's not .com?
might be .com. Yeah, DaveDraper.com, and buy every single one of Dan John's DVDs. Are outstanding. Dear
son, great speaker.
Yeah, great speaker, and again, just keeps it simple and very effective. He gets great results with his athletes, and really makes you reconsider some things that you potentially have forgotten or just neglected. The I also saw Gray Cook, John's great friend, Gray Cook.
Come on, man.
Talking about, believe it or not,
the
movement and FMS. Right. To be honest, like, I walked past him a couple times. I'm pretty sure he has no idea who I am. So, but the, again, it was more FMS stuff. But again, even what's like, again, like I'm trying to bring up, you know, even stuff that I don't necessarily completely agree with, I try to let myself be convinced as you know, much as possible, and seeing if there's anything new brought to the table. Big part of it was primitive movement patterns. Again, that's kind of the new hotness when it comes to movement right now in the industry, and not well earned. You know, there definitely is some stuff there, stuff that Chris, I'm trying to remember who I saw. Chris Perform, Eric had it brought in. One of the trainers for the Arizona Diamondbacks, and this is one of his big things, talking about Pavel and Yanda, and the primitive movement patterns and stuff. That's super interesting. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to go see his talk, because I do think that stuff is really interesting. I'm trying to still kind of consider how much of that stuff is applicable in terms of training adults. And the one thing, like, if we have... I think it was when Charlie Weingroff came into our facility. He, or it might have been Weingroff, talking about always working from the ground up, like even working from like the, you know, just starting off lying down and then working your way up with everything, whether it's planks or other core movements. I still think it's a good idea. But I think that we still need to not like try to go completely and buy into all this stuff 100% and thinking that we need to train like and move like a 1-year-old.
Right.
But it obviously carries over to stuff like the Turkish get up and things like that. So
which is also the new hotness.
It's yeah. Well, I mean, kettlebells are kind of been the new hotness the last couple of years, and
yeah.
To be honest, I love kettlebells. I spent $300 on kettlebells. I have them in my house, and I think they are pretty cool. And doing bottoms up kettlebell presses, I think, are awesome. I do try to get in some Turkish get ups from now and then. I'm not good enough at them to you know, I'm not like Nagar who uses like a 32 kg kettlebell to do get ups. Is just unbelievable.
Beast.
Unbelievable strength.
Beast.
And, like right there is a prime example. She's ridiculously strong, and but again, you know, nothing against. I've seen the FMS stuff before, and I still, you know, do FMS my new clients just to get an idea. But it's weird. The more I see that stuff, I still kind of start buying back into it a little bit, and hearing other people talk about it, hearing Charlie Weingroff talk about how he's such a gigantic fan of it, and I can't just disregard what he's saying, because he's just again, super smart guy. So I listen to everyone who's super smart, and you know, try to do my best to come to conclusion after I've heard all the arguments. But yeah, that was great, Cook. And I also saw Alan Cosgrove's talk on business, which I've seen a couple times, and still good. I just went to see it because I like to see guys like Alan Cosgrove talk and Dan John because they're good speakers and they're entertaining, and I don't find myself falling asleep or wanting to kill myself because I just got a 60-minute infomercial. because that is sometimes something that needs to be avoided. I'm really bummed I didn't get to see Kelly start on Sunday. I heard he was fantastic, very similar to the stuff that he did at MBSC. Again, if you haven't seen Kelly's stuff, it's, the mobility wad.
Right.
Sound a little bit more familiar. He did like a two-hour talk at our facility that you can also check out at Body by Boyle online. I think that's pretty much it. That's all I saw. And again, there's some interesting talks in there. Again, hopefully when I go to Chicago, I can see a lot more. Kind of bummed I didn't get to see Joe Dowdell's talk. I actually got to catch up with him at the social. Met Romanello at the social. Talked it up with him for a little bit. And I think that is about it from Providence. Thank you for everyone that came up and said hi and went out to the social and stuff like that. Went to the strengthcoach.com social afterwards, which was also great. Huge props to Anthony Reyna, and did a great job.
Yeah, we had his, money for charity. Get together, right? Yeah.
Yep. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. So stick around. We got more stuff. All right, we're back for the mailbag, and we got some good stuff through Facebook today, so huge ups to everyone on Facebook and
big ups.
That Twitter thing. Facebook.com/KevinLarrabee to get me on there, and then you can submit some questions through there a little bit easier than sending emails sometimes, and same thing with Twitter.com/KevinLarrabee. Got some great stuff on there. I usually try to put inspirational quotes from the Fast and Furious movies on there. That is a thing that's grown to epidemic proportions of just inspirational quotes these days. Wow. I couldn't be more inspired right now. So many quotes. Just play the Friday Night Light music in the background all day. That's all I need. Like that slow guitar. Like, boo, doo, doo, doo. All right. Anyways, we got a mailbag for you. Right, John?
Or you can come join me on my Facebook and see videos of Obama singing Call Me Maybe or whatever the song is. Yeah, man. Yeah.
All right, 2012.
It's pretty funny. Yeah.
Let's go to the first question from Dylan, kind of an open-end topic, but I think it's a good one. He says, what have you learned in the trenches recently? Good question. Do you want me to take this first?
Sure.
Well, again, one of the great things about working at MBSC is that there are a ton of athletes that come through there. Ton of adults. We're just coming into next week starts our summer session where we will have roughly 300 athletes, 320-something athletes going through our doors every single day, not including our adult population and our personal training population. So it's very cool to see a lot of that stuff. And again, you get to pick up things here and there. I would probably say, you know, one of the big things that you end up learning when you just spend tons and tons of time in the gym is just making sure that you are able to classify what is considered acceptable form in terms of lifting and movement pattern stuff, warm-ups, things like that. And it does become a little bit of an a challenge when you have such big groups, kind of going into the groups as big as 12. Thankfully at our gym we are more or less overstaffed when it comes to our coaches, so we make sure we have plenty of coaches on the floor to take care of everyone. But, that is kind of one of the things that's always bugged me is just, people allowing for good enough form or not acceptable form. I think that was something that was ingrained when I was interning at Cressy, is just making sure that everything looks great. You got to think about it as the store shop window setup, where if you see somebody, watching from outside and they're watching you train athletes and they can really get an idea of, how you are as a coach based on how things kind of look, which isn't always the case because sometimes you get new athletes who come in and have no idea what they're doing. They can barely stand on one leg, let alone move in, multiple planes on a single leg. So I think that's one thing, is just trying to get an idea of what is that you can find to be acceptable form on some things, and find some people have different variations on that. I find that I want things to look as perfect as possible, because why shouldn't it? And again, sometimes you can't watch everyone at the same time. You can't coach everyone at the same time. But I think that's something that you have to come to grips with. And for people who want to transfer it over to just themselves training personally, everything you do should look awesome. You're training yourself. So I would do your best to make sure that you are, if you're following someone's exercise videos, make sure it's someone that knows what they're doing and displays proper form throughout all their lifts, and carry it over yourself. That's why it's okay to have mirrors in your gym. You don't have to train in the basement. You can, if you have nice mirrors where you can kind of see what's going on, and just a couple of simple things. That these are just a couple of simple things that I think come up quite a bit. Make sure you're going all the way down in your chin-ups. Make sure you are having a slight bend in your knee while you're doing single-legged deadlifts. Make sure you are keeping, the best way, we always, say, keep your stomach tight, keep your chin down, keep your chest up, shoulders down. Like, think, when you're moving around, make sure your posture is something that you would consider to be close to perfect while just standing and walking around. I think when people tend to fall apart while they're moving, that's a huge issue. And you see it, I see it in professional, people that are in this industry, and I see their videos online, and I'm like, I'm sorry, dude, that looks like shit. Like, what are you? And it's not max effort lifts. It's just yeah, that's bad form. You got to clean that stuff up and make sure that when you go into the gym and do stuff yourself, hold yourself to that same standard. Because at the end of the day, you're not going to get stronger with bad form. You're going to find yourself breaking down with bad form. And everyone's going to be like, look at that dude over there. Looks not good. I didn't want to say stupid, but, display yourself. Make sure that everything you do is fantastic. Because that kind of bugs me sometimes. And you just let that stuff slide.
Lead by excellence.
Yeah. And to be honest, if you're listening to this, you're better. No offense, but you're better than everyone else in that gym, because you have a understanding of what's going on, and you probably are putting together or following a fitness program that is well structured and has good exercises in it. So make sure you are still able to say, oh, look at that dude in the squat rack. Look at him curling. Isn't that stupid? Or look at that guy on the leg press machine. Wow, I'm doing way better stuff than he is, because I'm actually not sitting on my ass while trying to exercise.
Fair enough.
John, you do lots of stuff in the sand?
I do lots of stuff in the sand, and it gets in your shoes, and I've learned to wear good socks. No, I've got two things that come to mind that I've just been more focused on lately and noticing their interplay, and I think one is effective for trainers and coaches, but the other would be effective for a trainer, coach, or just someone listening that's just goes to the gym and doesn't work in the field, but also their interplay. For the trainers and coaches, a lot I've been very focused and aware of my internal versus external cueing. And what that means is an internal cueing is something referring to the body. So you might tell someone to squeeze their glutes when they squat, squeeze their shoulder blades when they do a row. And the external cues would be, you know, put hip. It in effect, it tells them to do the same thing. It's squeeze your butt, push your hips forwards, or to get your elbows in your back pockets when you do the row. So it does the same thing. It squeezes your shoulder blades together to guide the elbows down and back. But what they found in research is that those external cues will typically do a better job of teaching an athlete or teaching your client what to do, because they can visualize what that means. They may not understand the concept of squeezing your glutes, but they would understand the concept of stand tall at the end of the squat or the wall. So I've been very aware of how I cue and the timing of those cues and what I'm telling my clients to do and or patients to take care of and to do. And I have found that it's immediately more effective. So even little things like to do a proper given leg drive, you can tell them, you know, push your shoulders down, then, you know, squeeze your legs and push it. Or you can just tell them, drive your shoulders just right through that bench. And immediately it has a response. So I found some really nice effectiveness through that. Now, the other thing that I've been very aware of is the home exercise programs that I give. And, you know, you should, whether it's a patient or a personal training client, you should always give them some type of something to do at home. It may be as simple as just a postural cue, or it can be, you know, mobility drills that they do at home or whatever. But what I've been more interested in lately is that reinforcement of posture, and not necessarily by just exercises, because people don't do exercises at home. You tell them to do it 3 times a day, they do it once if you're lucky. But so what I've been trying to do more often is to reinforce whatever corrections we're trying to do. So if you have a client that comes in and, you know, let's just take a glute amnesia, which is a typical presentation, and they're shifted one side versus the other. So it's not just enough that you get them to straighten and reshift themselves while they're exercising. They have to do this at home. If they don't, then all they're doing is, you know, a couple times in an hour correcting, and then they've got the rest of the day to just go right back into their previously assumed position. And that may or may not be a problem for what you're trying to accomplish in the gym, performance-wise, health-wise, pain-wise, whatever. So I've really simplified a lot of those home exercise programs, almost to the point where I'm not giving them any exercise, and I'm just saying, I want you every 20 minutes to put a timer on your you know, phone so that you check your position and say, oop, my right hip is shooting off to the right, I need to push that to the left. And little by little, that starts to take hold, so that it truly is a home exercise training program. You're reinforcing the guidelines that you set in the gym. Now, the way that they interact is the cues that you give to reinforce that posture, to reinforce that position, should be the same cues that they think about at home. So a lot of times for, like, let's say a thoracic rotation, which you find typical of a back pain presentation, I'll use the rib hump. You know, if I'm rotated to the left, my right ribs will be a little bit larger feeling than the left if I put my hand right on underneath my chest bone there. So if I rotate back to the right, they even out, and you can feel that. You just feel the ribs kind of shift and slide until they're even. So when they go at home, I don't tell them just to, okay, I want you to fix your posture. What I tell them is, make your ribs even every 20 minutes. And so I'm taking those cues from the gym and I'm using it for the home. And then when they come back to the gym and I retest the next day and I say, show me your center, they can do that. Their hand goes right to the rib cage and then they shift until, yep, this feels even to me. So that's that kind of interplay between what you're using at the gym to have effect in the everyday life, and then bringing that back to have a better effect and training effect in the gym.
Stuff. The you know, he had a follow-up to that as well. Let's see, which one do you go first? Oh, no, I kind of covered that a second ago. How to make quote, health into tangible goals. One of the things that I like to really drive home with my clients, both online and in person, is that, you have to keep in mind, and let's be honest, 95% of everyone that I'm going to see in terms of a personal training client, online or off, would be someone looking for fat loss or some kind of physique-based goal. And one of the things that I like to start off with is, especially if they're coming off of a a bad training program, poor nutrition habits, I like to really just start going with some simple stuff like they need to look out for as things that are showing progress, and to keep in mind that, you might not go into this losing 4 pounds a week. Maybe the first thing that you'll start seeing is that, oh man, I went from 8 push-ups to 10 push-ups and, for 3 sets. Like, that's awesome. That's huge. That strength benefit is something that carries over in terms of overall health throughout the rest of their life. Same thing when it comes to just, maybe doing something as simple as, oh man, I cut off like 15 seconds on my 3 mile bike ride. Like, that's great too. Carrying it over to nutrition, making sure that they are just making better health, better food choices, and not necessarily, oh yeah, make sure you get in 2,200 calories today. No, just make sure you're making better food choices first. And I find that a lot of people will automatically start feeling better, not probably like the first 72 hours, but closer to that 7 to 10 day window, once they've made those changes and stuck to them, where they are starting to get in better produce, better meats, better dairy products into their diet, they start feeling, so much better, and you fall off the need, or you fall off the those cravings kind of fall off for the the pizzas and the ice creams and stuff like that, the stuff that they are kind of craving beforehand. So that is what I would kind of just say, intangible goals. All right, let's go from 8 push-ups to 10 push-ups. Let's get in 7 straight days of locked in nutrition, where you're getting in your supplements, you're getting in your, your quote unquote clean foods or acceptable food choices. And then once we get in, 30 days of that, then we can start dialing things in a little more from a workout perspective, from strength goals or physique goals, and into the kitchen when it comes to, all right, maybe we start dialing in our nutrition a little bit more. Maybe we start kind of edging towards a caloric goal or a meal size goal to try to continue to make progress. I think one of the big things that people have problems with still, like, this is something we talked about for years, but trying to go from 0 to 100 in one day just really doesn't work for a lot of people. And to be honest, sometimes nudging people in like a little bit at a time also doesn't help, because those bad habits end up taking over the good habits that they're trying to instill. So, yeah, I guess I kind of went around over the place with that. John, how about you?
No, but I agree with what you're saying. And I think that the idea is there's absolutely research and evidence that shows you can't do too much at once. There are some people that can, the outliers. But in general, you're looking at the idea that someone's going to come into your gym and hire you, and they want to change their lives. And that's a lot of things that they have to do. This isn't just quitting smoking. This is quitting smoking, and then every time that those impulses come up, it's a separate fight and a separate battle. So, you've got to build layers upon layers. And the idea is that if you're building a house, you can't build the roof until the four walls are built, and you can't build the four walls until the foundation is set. And if you try to do all of that at once, because you need all that to have a house, but if you try to do that all at once, you'd just be left with a pile of rubble. So the idea is that you attack one thing. It's the same as cueing, right? If I'm teaching someone to squat, they may be doing 10 different things wrong, but I'm not going to tell them 10 different corrections. I'm going to give them one correction, possibly two if they capture that one. I'm going to tell them, bring your hips forward or stand tall. Just stand tall. And not only does that correction help to capture a few of the other ones without them even realizing it. It'll probably engage abs a little bit better. It'll probably engage the hips a little bit better. But once they capture that, then we can start to look at what are the shoulders doing? What's the head and the eyes doing? You know, what are the feet doing, the knees? But you have to establish something first that they can work off of. So the same thing with health. If they come in, maybe I don't even care what they're doing with their diet. I just want to see them consistently, you know, two or three times a week. Once they've made that part of their lifestyle, then we can start to talk about nutrition. But here's the beauty of that. There is research that shows that when people start becoming more active, they almost naturally start to give up some of the bad nutritional habits. So if it's a question of which came first, the chicken or the egg, in this sense, it really is the gym comes first and leads to better nutritional habits. And the end of the race, all you care about is that they're eating well, that they're lifting consistently, that they're exercising consistently. So if you start with what they've chosen to do first and you solidify that, you'll find that the other things are easier piece by piece. And then you can start to say, okay, let's take a look at, you know, now I want you to just eat, you know, try to make two meals healthy and then have the third one do whatever you want. You know what I mean? You want to try to just make small, small changes that they can acquire, that they can be successful at, and then lead off from there. And you can do stuff. I just find something very helpful. However they want to do it, if they want to keep a diary or whatever, I like calendar. So whatever that goal is, if they achieved it for that day, they get a star. And if they didn't, if they blew it, they either put an X or a sad face or something like that. And that way it starts to encourage them, because if they look at the calendar and the whole week was full of stars and they have a weak moment, they're going to look back on that calendar and go, you know what, I don't want to blow this. I've done so well. You know what I mean? So just little tricks to encourage change. But the fact of the matter is, if you try to do too many things at once, you will absolutely blow it. That's and you'll awesome. Lose them.
Good call. I like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle stickers on the good days, and then I put the Care Bears on the bad days, because F the Care Bears. Let's see, we got time for, man, it's been a long show.
I got a puppy that needs a walk, man.
Do you?
Well, yeah, I can go for another question.
All right, let's the last one. Okay. Suzanne, what do you think about the current debates that appear to be anti-functional fitness? Oh, and how did a C-list Brit like the Staith become such a superstar? Seriously, over here, we just don't know. It's a two-parter. Let's hit on part two first, because I think, you know, talking that way about one of the crown jewels
All right.
Of the United Kingdom is just like, honestly, that is, I don't know. I think that's pretty much the same as like trying to badmouth the Queen.
You know, sometimes that God save of yours is a little creepy.
God save the Queen is what I always say.
It really is.
Any kind of
crank
like,
sucked.
That's a joke, right?
All right,
that's a good joke to get under my skin. All right, you know what, John? I'm gonna take a little bit of this because I work for the functional guy.
Yeah, it's true. Go for it.
This is an interesting debate, and this is I think this is, I'm reading into this a little bit,
First of all,
Charles Paul.
Like, I don't know that I'm necessarily privy to this. What's the pushback?
No, this is what I'm bringing up right now. Okay. Charles Poquin, he makes videos online now, and he is, the best way I can put this is, borderline out there when it comes to some of his views on things.
You think?
And, you know, I don't know Charles. I've met him once and seemed like a good dude. And now at this point, from what I know to be kind of, you know, from watching his stuff, from reading his stuff, seeing what is available, talking to people that have been to his certifications for both nutrition and for performance, I'm going to just straight up say, like, dude's out there.
And I think that, you know, I won't, for people who want to go read his stuff and check out his stuff, like that's cool. You know, for better or worse, Brett Contreras did a video on YouTube calling him out and mentioning or citing a bunch of his statements that have come out in the past. And one of them was, you know, a video that's widely available about talking about the functional guy who is not strong, has never gotten anyone strong in his life. And it's widely known that Mike Boyle is known as kind of the functional strength guy. I don't know if you've heard of Functional Strength Coach 1, 2, 3, and 4. He has a book called Functional Strength. And he's open to pretty much saying, like, he never came up with that title. It's the publisher of the book put that on the book because, like, functional training was the new hotness when the book was coming out. And, you know, one thing I will say when it comes to this stuff is the people that are anti-functional, they're trying to sell you something else. And that's not necessarily a completely bad thing. The one thing that we've always talked about is that there's more than one way to do things. I will say that before going to work at MBSC, I wasn't completely sold on the system. I was still, you know, I had some of my my meathead, you know, still in me. And I'm like, oh, this isn't enough lifting. I got to do, you know, only sets of three because otherwise I won't get stronger. And one thing I will say that we have some ridiculously strong athletes at our facility. Two, Mike was, I don't know if you knew this, but he was a pretty prevalent powerlifter back in the day. So he was pretty strong until, you know, he talks about when moving on to not back squatting, you know, his back started bothering him, having problems with his knees and his shoulders, and then he stopped powerlifting. It's a logical outcome of that. And see, you look at our staff members, we have ridiculously strong staff members that follow the program at MBSC that are, you know, I got to say, like, that whole argument that he came up with is just absolute BS. And, you know, I do have to say that I'm only 26. I'm not like a super adult. I'm kind of like a young adult. And I will say,
can we name the podcast that? Can that be the title of the show? I'm not a super adult.
Sure. But okay. If I'm going to talk about someone on the internet, first off, we're talking about people on the internet, guys. Calling people out on the internet. Like, come on. but if you're going to do that, at least, you know, say that I'm talking about this dude. Like, if I was going to badmouth, who do I want to badmouth? I can't think of a appropriate person, but say if I wanted a badmouth shot, I wouldn't say, like, that guy that's always, you know, talking bad about the Red Sox on the FitCast, like, that guy is an idiot. But it wasn't even that big. But
the last place Red Sox.
They're not in the last place.
Who's in the last place right now?
Some other team. I don't know.
I think it's the Red Sox.
I'm watching the Celtics right now. But I think that the whole anti-functional thing, I think that's from a lot of people that are not trying to sell you a strength and conditioning program. We train athletes. Mike Boyle trains athletes. I don't know if you heard about this, but he's the head strength and conditioning coach for the Boston Red Sox. Before that, he was with the BU hockey program and had tons of success with them. He's worked with the U.S. women's hockey team, and they're pretty effing good. All right? And ever since you know, this stuff started coming up, I'm like, there's just so many holes in that argument from the anti-functional fitness crowd. So that's it. Yeah, I didn't write down notes, so I probably should have wrote down notes before talking about this to have bullet points. But yeah, it's a joke, and it's for whatever people are trying to stir crap up and trying to get hits on their blogs and their YouTubes.
Well, I think what ends up happening, and that's first, a lot of times it is a misunderstanding of what the concept is. So functional fitness, I think a lot of us go back to the, you know, squatting on a BOSU ball with one leg and all this stuff, you know, that, that really early attempts to get away from machines and get into, you know, control of the body stuff. And, yep. and clearly none of us are really doing that kind of thing anymore. But I do think that some of that argument comes from there, where they look at that stuff and say, well, that's just silly. But most of us who might consider ourselves to be quote unquote functional trainers also agree that that stuff is pretty silly for the most part. I think that there's also always going to be, when there's something that's the new hotness in the industry, or people are coming out and doing things or speaking the gospel and saying that this is the only way to do things and everyone else that does it, that doesn't train the way that we do, is doing it wrong, there's going to be a backlash from the people that aren't doing that or have been around and found a different methodology that they enjoy. And let's be quite honest here. Like, there is no research that has looked at one way or the other and decided that this is better. A lot of the claims that we might make as far as, you know, body weight or simple, you know, non-machine based type of training for health and for function and for usable strength and for injury prevention, none of that is really evidenced either. It's all what we, you know, our opinions of how the body moves and stuff like that, but we don't really have any hard evidence to suggest that indeed there's an injury prevention in the way that we train versus the way that somebody else trains. We haven't seen that in professional sports either. So if the new round of coaches are doing more of that type of functional training and yet the injury rates have not dropped off, you know what I mean? Like, there's just a lot to be said about claims versus actual knowledge. But having said that, I do agree that sometimes it's also taking shots because you, in a sense, feel like your territory is threatened a little bit. You know, but just the beginning of this podcast, I was being a hater. We were just talking about, you know, intermittent fasting, and I'm going, yeah, I don't believe it. I mean, you know, and I'm being a hater. I mean, I think that the difference is, can you have constructive discussion versus saying, you never got anyone strong, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. That's childishness, and I agree with you. You know, if you want to make arguments based on, you know, a logical, you know, evidence and a logical flow of your thought process and have something constructive, then that's one thing. And that's what debate is about. And that's how we do drive discussions and further research questions and further research answers. But, you know, calling someone out on blogs or firing back and, you know, stuff is nonsense. It's silly. It's childish. I don't think that there's really any room for it. There shouldn't be, but there always will be, because people get passionate about what they believe in. And that's one, in my opinion, that is one of the most dangerous obstacles to learning truth, with a capital T. You know, if you're passionate about what you believe to the point where you believe that this is the way to do things, then when someone else comes along with an alternative approach, you absolutely dismiss it. You dismiss it on, you know, face value. This is, nope, no way, because I know that my way works. So there's no way that your way either works, or God forbid it works better. No way.
And straight that up, does not, like, and like, always have your money filter on and look at what's being sold mm-hmm. to you at the same time. Charles Poliquin's trying to sell a system for nutrition, a system for strength and conditioning. He has like mm-hmm. 14,000 supplements that he's trying to push. Like, there's a lot of stuff that's going on there that has to make you just turn that filter on, turn the BS up to like a 9 or 9 or an 8. I mean, you don't have to turn up to 10, but 9 or 8, and that will give you the ability to just like make sure like that BS doesn't come into your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that these sort of things, these little skirmishes and these little turf wars, that happens all the time. It happens all the time as new ideas are proposed, as new evidence is found, and then people really get mad and start shooting holes in evidence. You know what I mean? It's a little silly, and it's not, but it unfortunately is to be expected. And I think that that's where a lot of confusion does take place. And ultimately, it is just one person's opinion versus another person's opinion. That's all those things are, is opinions. That's not fact. People follow gurus. People listen to podcasts. People read blogs, and they take these things as fact. They are not facts. Some opinions may be a little bit better supported than others, but none of these things are fact. And it was interesting, a while ago, Mark Young posted on his Facebook, he said, you know, where do you go for your information? And he messaged me because I was the only person that listed a first level evidence. I said, PubMed, you know, where am I going for information? I'm going to a study. I'm not reading someone's blog. Blogs are interesting. They give you ideas. They put, you know, forward concepts that may start making you think, but that's not fact. And I was the only one. There was like 20, 30 responses, and everyone was listing their favorite gurus. And that's a problem. That's a huge, huge problem. So once, you know, you start believing your own garbage, then anyone else that disagrees is obviously wrong. And you get into this kind of pushing and shoving match, and it's just silly.
Yeah, and with everything that has been said, I will post-preface it by saying that Charles Poliquin is more successful than I will ever be. He has got sure. more people stronger than I probably ever will.
Sure.
So, you know, he's Charles Poliquin.
And
he got there.
Sure. And you know what? And you know what? What's your face from The Biggest Loser is more successful than him times 20. So there you go. It doesn't mean that he's right. Yeah. It doesn't mean that she's right either. You know, I mean, that's just, it's just, I mean, I'll tell you right now, half the crap that's coming out of my mouth, I guarantee you in like 10, 15 years, I'll probably say that was either wrong, partially correct, or just totally, I'm full of crap.
Guaranteed. I'll be in an ebook that you can buy for $39.95.
Hopefully, coming out soon. But that's, I mean, that's just the fact of life, and that's how we continue to learn. Yep. And if you stop doing that because you've decided that you're right, you're no longer evolving.
All right, let's wrap up this podcast. We got a nice hour and 20-minute show for you. Look at that.
Dear Lord.
Bring in the heat. Bring in the noise. Bring in the funk. That's
bring the pain.
House of Pain. So that's where mm-hmm. going to leave it off this week because I got to go to the facility, and John's going to go do pee-pee and poo-poo time with the pup.
And she has to go too.
And then John, then yeah, the dog has to go. All right, so Marty is shaking his head like he needs to go out. So
she's been a good girl. She's just asleep. She's just chilling. A good girl. Marty, nice recording. Yeah, nice recording.
All right. Well, anyways, sure. Stick around for the off topic. We got some great stuff going on in there. And go to thefitcast.com. Check us out on iTunes. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And finally, if you're going to be going to Chicago Perform Better, let me know. We're going to party it up at the Perform Better Social on Friday
night.
Like
a rock star.
Yeah, dude, open bar, man. Open bar all day. Not all day, but a couple hours.
Word.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Have a great week. And until next time, send in your letters to Miramax. Make sure we get Crank 3 going.
Okay. We suck.
We're back for episode 237 off topic discussion. John's in the house. John's got the biggest news. He's got a puppy.
I got a puppy. She's sitting right next to me chewing on her bone, so hopefully she won't start barking and foul up the hole.
What's the story? You know, if people, I mean, they should all be stalking us on Facebook, but if they're not, what's the story?
So here's what happened. We go out to the desert every weekend, and the Saudi weekend is Thursday.
So what's
Thursday
like the desert? Like, you're not in the desert right now?
Well, I am, but the desert really, like, Riyadh is a desert. The whole of Saudi Arabia, except for, like, the coastline, is pretty much desert.
Okay.
But the city itself is the city proper. So you have streets paved and buildings and, you know, whatever. Mm. But once that, it basically, it's kind of like they build the city out until they don't need to do it anymore. And then everything is just dirt.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's just what it is. It's just built in the center of the desert. So what we go out to, the prince has like a like just huge amount of land just out in what we would consider like the wilderness, right? I mean, in a sense, it's like we go camping every weekend, but they don't have forests here. You just do it in the desert, you know? So he has this whole camp, and we have like camper trailers there that each one, you know, each one of us has our own, and we sit out there, and it's kind of like it's a Saudi. Yeah, it's like a Saudi tradition thing. You know, it's like the Bedouin, the wanderers of the desert. So all the Saudis, that's what they do. That's their camping. You know, they go out to the desert and they sit under the stars and then they sleep at night and then they go back, you know, the next morning. So the prince really likes to do that. That's like his quiet place. You know what I mean? And he sits and he reads and he, you know, watches the news and whatever he does. So every weekend we go out there. So I was out there 2 weeks ago. And I was in the IT van where they have all the internet stuff hooked up. And I was just, you know, checking email on my phone and, you know, talking to my parents on Skype. And the prince and the entourage came out from where his trailer is. And we're just walking over to where we'll, like, sit and then we'll have dinner. And I hear this barking. And I thought it was, like, some of the guys screwing with me. You know, I was like, what am I hearing? And I walk outside the trailer and there are these two little puppies that, you know, I cited as like being like 3 months old. And that's basically what she was, just hiding underneath the trailer. And I was like, oh my God, what are you doing in the middle of the desert? It turns out that, you know, there are wild dogs all over the desert. And if you come to Saudi Arabia, there's cats, there's dogs, there's everywhere, you know? And there's like a mother with her litter that the Bedouin that work there, you know, during the week and stuff will like feed them or whatever, but they're wild dogs. They don't have anyone to care for. And obviously the desert is not the most wonderful place in the world to live. You know, nothing lives out there, you know?
Sure.
So, and this isn't, it's funny too. Yeah. And what's funny is as Americans or whatever, when we think of the desert, I think a lot of us think of like Arizona desert and, you know, that's not what the desert in Saudi Arabia looks like. It literally looks like a beach with no water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just dirt. So I, you know, I freak out. I start panicking because I see two little puppies that are, you know, apparently lost, and they're just kind of hiding scared underneath this camper. So I get, you know, like a bag of rice that they had there, and I'm feeding them. And at first they were really skittish, and then she would come over close enough and then started eating from my hand.
Mm-hmm.
So we got a rope that I kind of made into like a, you know, almost like a choker leash, you know what I mean? And I put it over my hand. I put my hand through it and then put the food in my hand. And when she was eating from my hand, I slipped the leash over her head and got her. And she started, you know, freaking out, obviously, and jumping around. And I scooped her up and held her in my arms. And she calmed down like immediately, got her in my car. The brother was still there, though, and I couldn't get him. And he'd been timid the whole time. He really wasn't coming near me. He would come to the food, but only if I was far away. And I got her in the car, but I didn't want to leave her there, so I tried to get the brother. He wouldn't come near me, so I drove her to my trailer, got her in there, kind of tied her up inside to the table that I have there and brought her some water in a dish, and she just kind of settled down, and she was calm. I went back to the trailer. He was, like, not having it. I mean, he was just sitting in the, you know, underneath it and not coming near me. Then I had to go do something, came back again, still couldn't get him. Some of the guys were there, and I was like, please, please, please try to get him. Please try to, you know, whatever. I ran back to make sure she was okay, and she's doing fine. She's just hanging out, sleeping. She's wagging her tail. And I went back, and he was gone. He just ran away, and that broke my heart. Now, my hope is, you know, dogs have large areas that they roam, so I'm hoping, you know, obviously he was where he typically is anyway, and he should have found his mother again. You know, they should have been able to track each other, but it broke my heart. I mean, like, I still worry about that dog, but I had her. We stayed the night, you know, I slept in the trailer with her. I bring her home the next day, and she's just been wonderful. I mean, she took to the house immediately. I've had her for 2 weeks. She's 4 months old, like tomorrow, roughly. She's paper trained. She walks loose on the leash. She knows to go outside. She's like wonderful. She, awesome. It's amazing. It's amazing. She's been so good. I mean, I couldn't ask for more. I mean, it's just, I mean, it's astounding how good she is. She knows her name. She knows to come. It just, she's awesome. So the first day or two, I was like, look, I can't keep a dog with the way we travel, whatever. I'll have to find a home for her. And seriously, after like 2 days, I was like, screw that. I'm keeping her.
Yeah, it's got to be better than the exactly. desert. So
yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, she's a beautiful dog. She's a Canaan, which is it's a desert dog. It's a desert breed dog. They look kind of like you might have a dingo in Australia. They kind of look the same way because dingoes are out in the desert in Australia. So the same sort of look. It's a very old breed, one of the older breeds that we know of. And they're very faithful. They're very good dogs. They're very calm dogs. And she's just awesome. So very happy. My little girl.
It's awesome. You did a good thing. And, you know, so hopefully it will work out. What do you got? Like, you got like 2 more years left out there?
3. Yeah, 3 more years. There are all kinds of like, I mean, Saudi Arabia is not the most pleasant environment for having dogs or cats. And they're just, it's not the same culture. They don't take to animals the way that we do like in the West. But you certainly have, you know, like pet stores and things. So you can get her stuff that, you know, that I need. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, like, we're going to Paris next month. I'm going to like come home with like a garbage bag full of stuff for her, you know. But they have kennels here for when we travel. I'm doing my best to try to avoid that because, I mean, she's a puppy. I don't want to do that. One of my patients, actually, I'm bringing her over tonight because when we go out to the desert, I'm there all night. So I'd be leaving her alone for like 9-10 hours, which is just far too long. It's good during the week because I'm only gone for like 4 or 5 hours for work. So that works out beautifully. But but during the weekends with the desert schedule, that's tough. But my patient, she's had dogs like her whole life. She has 2 little boys. She's like, please bring her over. Let us take care of her. You know, so I'm going to drop her off tonight and let her have a sleepover. So that works out well. And then I'm trying to coordinate with her or like a vet that she knows or, you know, they have like a almost like a group together that someone may be able to take her for the month that I'm gone. That would be perfect because I'm like waking up in the middle of the night, like shaking from the idea of putting her in a kennel. I do not want to have to do that. If I do, so be it. You know what I mean? Like it is what it is, but I'm really, really, really trying to avoid that. So hopefully it'll work out for her.
Yeah, and it, you know, again, it's better than leaving her out there in the desert either way.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, that was exactly what I was like. You know, no matter what I have to do to make this work for her, it's better. There was no way that dog was staying in the desert. I couldn't do that. There was no way. So, and then when I eventually come home, there's about 20% of the population is foreign born in Saudi Arabia. They bring in all kinds of like Westerners for technical jobs and all, you know, all kinds of different things. So there are a lot of services that help you to transport pets because it's a very standard thing because when you have, you know, you fly a German engineer in and he's got a German shepherd, he wants to bring his dog to Saudi. So they have a lot of companies that will help you to do that and make everything smooth and easy. And that'll be another 24 hours of agony for me. But, you know, I'll ship her home with me and she'll have a nice, happy life in the United States of America.
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 It's cool, man.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations to both you guys. And
I've already lost like 2 pounds from walking her like 5 times a day.
Good.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, to be honest, like one of the best parts about having Marty is that like he will bug the shit out of me until I walk him every morning. And I have to walk him far enough and long enough so he doesn't do it again in 2 hours. So,
yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, she's a puppy. She's got the bladder, of like, I don't know, a walnut, you know? So, wake up before I've even had like my coffee, we're out the door, you know? And at night, I take her over to the tennis courts and I throw the ball around and run the crazy out of her and she poops all over the tennis courts and I have to clean it up and I giggle.
Great.
Yeah, it's funny.
Great.
I just imagine some guys playing and someone sliding not knowing what he slid on.
Called the shit poop.
Yep.
That's cool, man. Well, I don't know. What do we got for some other off-topic stuff? I saw The Fighter for the first time.
Really?
This past couple days. Yeah.
Okay.
That's pretty good.
You know what was amazing? Warrior.
Which one's that?
Warrior
MMA movie?
The MMA one.
Yeah, you forget that I don't like MMA.
No, it doesn't matter. It's the same emotional, like the way that The Fighter wasn't really about boxing,
yeah,
is the same as Warrior is. And that was actually, I mean, The Fighter was an unbelievable movie, but Warrior will blow your mind. Like, you won't be expecting how good that movie is. It was phenomenal.
I will say.
You're such a punk.
Yeah, and in other crappy news, before I went to go watch The Fighter, this is going to sound horrible, but before I decided on The Fighter for my movie of the night, I started watching Starship Troopers 3.
Wow.
Because they brought back Johnny Rico.
Right. He's like a Admiral Rico.
Yeah, and it's so low budget. It's so bad.
Yeah. Direct-to-video awesomeness.
DVD. Yep. And so I tried like 15 minutes, and like that guy who I think Casper Van Dien, who
something like that. Yeah.
He was like so adamant. He was so pumped about coming back. He's like, yeah, like, you know, I made Starship Troopers, and like no one even cares about the comic book. It's all about the movie, and now they're remaking the movie. So, and I'm like, dude, you say all that shit and then you mailed it in. Like, it looks like he didn't even care. But that's okay. Also, I watched season 2 of The Walking Dead over the weekend. That was really good. I skipped the first 6 episodes, or I watched the first 2, skipped 3 through like 7.
Okay.
Because I stopped watching it in the beginning of the season because it was so boring. It was so dumb. I'm like, wow, let's hang out in a farm for 13 episodes and just debate about stuff. I know it's about, like, you know, the interaction between or the humanity after the world kind of goes to shit. But the stories were just so boring. It's just like everyone's like complaining. It's like I don't want to watch a show about people complaining all the time. That's why I don't watch Oscar-nominated movies, because are people bitching the whole time.
You don't want to watch a show about people complaining, but you'll record a podcast complaining.
Yeah, it's a double standard that I will live with, and it's you know, it's a problem about being. Oh, by the way, like one of the big, like, been super busy with other stuff, but we definitely. I'm happy to get the show back going. I had a bunch of people come up during the Perform Better, like more than ever. People were like, dude, where's the podcast? When are you going to be doing it? You doing one this weekend? So that's really cool. And hopefully, and I actually ran into Keith Scott while I was at the seminar. So good to catch up with him. What else do I got? I think that's going to about do it for me. I beat Mega Man 2.
Wow.
First time in my life. That was a huge crowning achievement.
That's a huge crowning achievement.
And I made it all the way to the end of Mega Man 3, where you have to start going to the Wily stages, and I just can't do it. It's too hard.
I hate that. I hate that. I did that with I think it was one of the what he calls the Final Fantasies. Like, you play the whole damn game, and then the end boss is so impossible that you're like, did I just waste like a week of my life?
I did the same thing with Max Payne 3. It sounds like I've been playing a lot of games, but we haven't recorded this in 4 months, or 4 weeks. So
4 months.
I went all the way to the end of Max Payne 3, like a super hard game. And then at the end, I'm like, screw it. I'm not like, I've been trying to beat this 5 minute part for the last 30 minutes. I got more important things to do. So.
Yeah, you get frustrated as hell.
That's cool. Yeah, well, I'm just at the point where, like, I don't. It's okay if I don't finish a game. It's gonna be okay.
Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't kill your life.
I think that
you can just go on YouTube and see what happens, and you're like, all right.
Yeah,
I feel
complete. My client was playing the game too, and he's like, oh yeah, you were like 2 minutes from the end, and it's just like they kill each other, and it's great.
Yeah, exactly.
Sounds like Max Payne. I'm trying to think, man. Anything else that I'm forgetting? I feel like there's something important. Oh, I got the Assassin's Creed Revelations, and I'm 5 minutes into that.
Oh, okay.
That's the latest one. It was $20 yep. on Amazon, so I figured, what the hell?
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Like I said, it's a fun game. If you'd never played the other ones, you'd be like, this is the greatest game ever. But if you have played the other ones, you're like, this doesn't quite live up.
Well, I'm bummed because I'm playing this. This is my first one on the PS3, and it doesn't run as well on the PS3 as it does on the 360. At least I feel like there's like lots of slowdown and stuff.
I don't know.
So I'm like kind of bummed out about that. E3 just happened the last couple of days. There was no big announcements, really. No new systems. No. There's the new Nintendo one, but horrible response from everything. Yeah, like everything sucked. Like I usually... let's put it this way. Last year, I took Monday and Tuesday off of E3 week just to watch the press conferences. This year, I obviously did not. But the press conferences were... There was nothing exciting because Microsoft and Sony are at the end of their console generation. So they're just like Halo 4 and the new stuff from the guys that make Uncharted looks nuts. Which I think you posted that.
I did.
That looks really good. New Assassin's Creed looks great. Nintendo stuff is boring.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, the Nintendo like should have come into this. Like it was their game to win. And they fucking just, they just kept like dribbling the ball off their foot the whole time. It was really bad. So,
yeah.
Who knows? I mean, they haven't even announced a price. The stuff is coming out in the holiday season, the new Wii U. And they're like, yeah, here's a new Mario game. Here's a bunch of terrible games that you wouldn't even play on your iPhone. And I'm like, all you had to do is show me some Zelda. Show me some like Metroid. Show me something that looks cool. But
nothing about the Wii's ever interested me.
Well, the Wii had like Super Mario Galaxy 1 and 2. Those were great. The Zelda games were good. And that's Nintendo.
That's all Nintendo is. You get Nintendo for about 5 games.
Yeah, and like I'm like more and more. I'm just like I'm happy I have my NES and like I have like 40 games for that, like the best of the best, and I could just like go back and play those if I really need to play a Mario game. But yeah, I think that is that's 20 minutes of off topic. I think we're all caught up.
Yeah,
I haven't seen the Avengers.
Yeah, neither have I.
But if you think about it, this summer I was talking,
it's epic.
I was talking with someone at work and I'm like, you guys think about this. We get friggin' the Avengers, Spider-Man, Batman.
Prometheus
this weekend. Like the summer is just packed.
I'll tell you what, did you see the MTV Awards commercial preview thing for Batman?
No. I'm avoiding the Batman stuff, so.
Oh, mind blowing. I like the honestly, like as much like I was super hyped for Batman. The first like trailer was mind blowing. I was like watched it like 100 times. Then the second one didn't really like Avengers came out and it was so like good. I'm waiting for it to get a bootleg DVD here because they have no movie theaters here. But the Avengers came out
for the legal version.
Yeah, because that's gonna be in another like 3-4 months. I'm too anxious for this. And they what do you call it? So they. Like the Avengers came out, it's like mind blowing. Everyone, $50 billion a thing made. And I almost kind of not lost interest in Batman, but it just like, I was like, God, how is Batman going to live up to the hype, whatever? This thing on the MTV Movie Awards,
good.
Oh my God, it makes it so sick because it's just the tone of the spot. It's just unbelievable. Because it starts off with like, what's his name, interviewing Selena Kyle. He's the cop and he's like, I guess he's got her under arrest or whatever it is. And the way that she is just talking to him and the way that you feel the character through like 5 bits of dialogue, you know what I mean? And I was just like, maybe a little bit. Yeah, a little bit. Not too much. A little bit. But seriously, the movie, it like totally, not that I wasn't interested, but it totally recaptured me. I cannot freaking wait to see this movie. That's going to be mind-blowing.
It's totally another Batman movie.
Yeah.
And they pushed back to G.I. Joe like 18 months. Yeah, because
it sucks. Did you read all the articles on it? They said it just sucks.
No, it's got The Rock in it. So
no, dude, the first one was garbage, and the second one's going to be garbage too. Do you know why? Do you know why they pushed it back? Did you read?
Yeah, there wasn't a good relationship between the two dudes, and they killed.
No, they killed Duke like in the first 5 minutes of the movie, and then they screened it, and people were like, "Are you serious?" And
no,
they
like all the 16-year-old girls were like, "Are you serious? I need to see."
Maybe so,
see pecs. I need pecs. I need male full frontal. Man.
Well, if you like the first movie, you suck at life, and that's the end of that.
Have you met me? I like bad movies, John. I like bad movies because they're fun, and you know what? I don't have to be like, oh, you know, the interaction between those two characters, it was on such a deep level where I could really feel where they were coming from. No, dude, stop. I saw explosions over there. They were shooting like outside of a car while spinning in 360 blew stuff up. Like, it's great. You know, whatever. It's good. All right, we're going to record show.